Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me today, we have yet another roundtable of Covers awesomeness, where we are going to get down to the Sweet 16 matchups to help you be a more informed better. And coming from the East, I would like to welcome Jason Logan.
Gotta take myself off mute. Hi, Rob. Glad to be back.
And coming from the West, we've got Rohit Panea.
Great to be back, Rob.
And in the South, we have Jared Hockman.
A bracket might be destroyed, but there's still plenty of bets for us to win.
And last but certainly not least, our friend Taco, a.k.a. Andrew Cayley, doing the Midwest.
Oh, what a disaster area that's been.
Well, good. Well, what we're going to try and do.
Oh, all of them. All.
What we're going to try and do is help you navigate the rest of the tournament so that you can be an informed better and bring in those dollar bills, y'all. So we'll go through each of the regions, each of the games, starting with the East, bringing in Jason Logan here. And Jason, let's start with a really juicy matchup. Michigan, the one seed, laying 2.5, taking on Florida State.
Yeah, and this one actually up to 3 now at some places with money coming in on Michigan. I'm actually going the other way on this one. I like Florida State in this matchup, specifically what I saw from them in that Colorado game. Now, everyone's going to look at that first half and be like, oh, my God, that was terrible, terrible basketball. Wasn't bad if you had the under. But also in the final 20 minutes of that game, Florida State finally came back. We haven't seen Florida State play Florida State basketball in almost a month. And they came back. It was dynamic play inside and out. It was three-point shooting. It was second-chance points off of rebounds. And they continued to defend as well, too, and which is something I think is going to help them keep this one close within the spread and perhaps knock off Michigan. And that's this Leonard Hamilton junkyard dog defense that he's throwing out there. And it's just this mishmash of different looks. And it's not just a zone or a man-to-man. It's like throwing out box and ones and a lot of these really weird looks on defense. And it particularly doesn't stack up well for Michigan, which is a team that is very regimented in the half court set. They want to move the ball around. You know, they average a lot of assists per game. They like to, and that's how they broke down LSU. They slowed that game down, slowed down that Athletic Tigers team, and just kind of wore them down with physical play inside, getting to the hoop. There were a ton of fouls in that game as well, too. But I think Leonard Hamilton's defense is going to force this Michigan offense to kind of freestyle a bit, which is something they're not particularly great at. Florida State allows less than 12 assists per contest. And then also, too, they hold their own on the glass. They're a big, versatile team as well, too. And I think that matches up really well against Michigan's big, strong guys, too. They change a lot of shots in the lane with that size. And they also owned a rebound percentage of over 53% on the year. So I don't think they're going to give up a lot of second-chance looks that Michigan was able to grab against the Tigers as well, too. So I like Florida State plus 2.5. On this one, too, I'm going with the over. You know, I'm leaning in on that Florida State defense, but I'm going over 140. This one is a crazy move in the total. It opened as big as 148. It's down now to 143.5. I like the over when it was big, and I like the over even more now that the line has dropped so significantly. It's those Michigan made almost 54% of their looks against LSU. They were 10 for 25 from three-point land. They're one of the better efficient offenses. There we go. Got it out. I got hit with that frisbee last night and that knocked my brain loose. But they also hit 9 of 26 triples. So they are shooting the ball particularly well from outside too. And then the Seminoles, like I said, that offense really started clicking in the second half against Colorado, started knocking down the three balls that they haven't been able to do away from Tallahassee. And this is a rich, deep team too. Leonard Hamilton can roll a lot of guys off the bench. I love the guard matchups here for FSU as well, too. I expect there to be some points scored with the clock stopped as well. As I said, this is going to be a physical game. Both teams are going to get to the foul line. And if you're a fan of overs, you got to be a fan of fouls as well, too, because that is plenty of scoring with the clock stop. These teams, Florida State went 17 for 21 from the stripe versus Colorado. Michigan went 20 for 25 from the line in the win over LSU. So they shoot the ball particularly well from the charity stripe as well, too. So I like the over in this one. And if you want to sprinkle in a little fun prop, Florida State was one of the better first half teams all season until kind of that season ending slump where they couldn't get off to a quick start. But I like Florida State to go over their first half team total of 33.5. They only scored 24 against Colorado in that dismal first half against the Buffs. But this team, they want to come out of the gate. They averaged 39.8 first half points in the regular season. That was sixth most in the country. And then we've also seen Michigan. Michigan's given up some big points in the first half as well, too. They allowed 42 to LSU in that first half. And then back in the Big Ten tournament, they allowed that slow motion Maryland offense. They put up 38 in the opening 28 minutes of that Big Ten tournament game as well, too. So going over first half team total on FSU, which is 33.5.
My biggest hesitation on the Florida State side, which is something that was there before the tournament started, is the turnovers, where they do have a propensity to turn the ball over. And there's an element of me that just doesn't trust them, albeit they're such an impressive team from a physically imposing side of things that they pose these unique matchup differences that can be hard to guard. So let's move on to the next game. We've got Alabama. The tide is rolling, baby. Laying 6.5, taking on UCLA. And Jason, I've really liked this Alabama team. They're my Final Four pick out of this region. What are your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, and I will say that I've bet against UCLA in all three of their tournament games, their first four against Michigan State, their opening game, this one, the last one against Abilene Christian, and lost all three of them. So the Bruins have taken me to the woodshed here, but I'm going to fade them again. Why not? Right? Why not try to be consistent here? But it's tough because you've got this Bruins team that does really match up well with what Alabama brings to the table. UCLA does play a little plodding pace. Their bigs are athletic. They're not overly big, but those guys do work really well on the boards as well, too. They don't give they crash the glass really well. Don't give a whole lot of offensive rebounds, which is something that Alabama's fantastic at. And also UCLA doesn't turn the ball over as well, too. The big thing is that now they have to sit for a week. You had this team that built a ton of momentum in that first four win. They only basically won. They were a bit behind big against MSU early on, came back, tied it, won it in overtime, and then that snowballed into this run into the Sweet 16. And because of the tournament schedule now, they don't play till Sunday. And so now Mick Cronin's going to sit this team on ice. I think it's going to break up the momentum and some of that great chemistry that they have going right now. They're hitting a lot. If you've watched their games, I think they've hit probably the toughest shots in the tournament of any team out there. They hit a lot of shots that they probably don't have any business hitting, or at least didn't hit during the Pac-12 season. But now they come in against this Alabama team, and Alabama shook it off against Iona. They looked kind of really mediocre for about 30 minutes of that game, and then found their form in the final 10 minutes, pulled away, almost covered that spread against the Gales too. And then against Maryland, which is another slower tempo team like UCLA, came out and just ran the Terps into the floor. They were hitting threes. They were scoring in transition. They were scoring off of turnovers. It's just, you know what's coming from them. And I thought the spread was going to be much higher. We were talking on Monday night there. The days are all blending together. But on Monday night, and saying, okay, what is the opening spread for this UCLA-Alabama game? And to Jared's credit, he threw out 5.5. I think, Rohit, you put out 4. And I said 8. I said Alabama 8. And so when it came out Alabama 5.5, I said, all right, give me the Tide. And it's already gone up to 6 here. We'll see where it closes. But I'm going with the Tide and laying the 5 in this one. And then as far as the over goes, the over-under goes, 142.5 is where I got it. It's up to 145.5. I went over 142.5. As much as we look at this UCLA team and they are plotting, they've been very, very efficient on offense. Like I said, they're hitting a lot of great shots out there, working the ball around. They've also been really good from three-point range as well, too. They're hitting 47% from three-point range. And I expect them to have some success. I don't expect them to be as hot. Like I said, I think that break is going to slow them up a little bit here. But Alabama is just a team that loves to push it in transition. They are among the top transition teams in college basketball. UCLA, not that great in transition defense. And not that great at defending the three-point arc as well, too. And we saw Alabama just make it rain against Maryland. I tried to look at some of UCLA's past games and say, okay, which teams have they played that had a similar tempo? And Arizona State was really the only Pac-12 team that came anywhere close to kind of the pace of Alabama. And while they are not Alabama, and that's very clear, those games, UCLA got sped up. They won both games, but they won one in overtime and covered in overtime, thanks to overtime. And then they won the next one by 2 points and failed to cover. So they've definitely got sped up by those up-tempo teams. And I think if you get sped up by Alabama, you're treading in deep water at that point. But not to poo-poo all over UCLA. They're very much a first-half team. And my little prop for this game is UCLA first-half team total over 32.5. If you go back to that four-game losing streak that they kind of had before the tournament started, great starts to those games, and then they fell apart in the second half. And they've continued to post good scores here in the first half as well, too, during the tournament. 38, 33, 31 points in the first half of those tournament games. And then Alabama watched Maryland put up 38 points on the board in the first 20 minutes of Monday's contest as well, too. Iona scored 32. If we go back to the SEC tournament, they allowed LSU to score 37. Tennessee scored 40 in the first half. So not a great first half defense from the Crimson Tide as well, too, who kind of wait for that second half to for teams to get tired of running with them, and then their defense takes over there. So UCLA first half team total. So a little six bets for the Sweet 16.
Thank you very much, Jason. So moving over to the West, going to bring in Rohit. And Rohit, let's start with Gonzaga laying 13.5, taking on Creighton. And at this point, why would anybody want to get in front of the freight train that is Gonzaga?
Well, you know what? It's kind of funny because I'm a huge Gonzaga fan. I already said that they're my team to win it all. But I actually faded them on the spread the last two games, and they made me pay for it. They absolutely destroyed, just murked Norfolk State. I figured it would be maybe a 30-point win. They end up winning by almost 45. Oklahoma, I took Oklahoma, figured Oklahoma would be able to cover that big spread. Came down right down to the wire. Oklahoma missed those free throws at the end, which kind of killed me. But at this point, yeah, I'm kind of riding with Gonzaga. I'm not sold on Creighton at all. They did have an impressive win against Ohio. But I remember that first round game against UC Santa Barbara. I kind of saw that coming. I definitely took Santa Barbara with the points. I also sprinkled a little bit on the money line on Santa Barbara, and they almost pulled it off. That game came right down to the wire as well. Creighton's just not looking that great now, especially on offense. They've had about two good offensive games in the last month. Over their last eight games, they're shooting about 43.9% from the field. This is a team that was one of the most efficient offenses in the country for the first half of the season, and then just kind of drop down to mediocrity. And that's not going to be good enough to cut it against a Gonzaga team that runs and guns, you know, hits their field goals at a 55% rate. It's just not going to cut it. Gonzaga is just going to score way too much for them. They have too many weapons for Creighton to really keep up with. That said, I'm still just leery of these full game spreads. Gonzaga did cash it against Oklahoma, but by just half a point. I'm really looking at the first half ATS and trying to get value out of that. You'll notice too, one of the funniest things I noticed about on the weekend was that Gonzaga game against Oklahoma, the line was 14.5. First half spread was 8. I actually saw the first half spread creep up at books before the full game spread did. I saw that first half spread go all the way up to 9.5, and then the full game spread followed to 15.5, which I thought was kind of interesting. So I think books are kind of in on that as well. They know, you know, Gonzaga is the number one first half team in the country, has an average first half scoring margin of over 14 points per game. That's insane. And then on top of that, they've covered the first half in 7 of their last 10 games. So yeah, if I had to, you know, make a pick on the full game ATS, I'm siding with Gonzaga, but my better bet is taking the first half bet.
All right, moving on. We've got USC laying 2.5, taking on Oregon. And these have been two of the more impressive teams. And at this point, I would have liked to see them not matching up here because I actually like what I'm seeing out of both of them. Oregon is a team that I identified in my brackets as a team that I did like, and they are certainly showing up. They looked so impressive versus Iowa, and certainly USC absolutely steamrolled Kansas.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about it last week about how we both liked Oregon, and I think I was mentioning that I was not convinced about Iowa, and they have a tendency to just not play well against really good teams, and that really comes to show because I think Iowa was one of those teams that you see throughout the year. Every time they played a really good team, they lost. And you can look at, you know, one win, you know, one loss against Michigan, one loss against Ohio State here and there and say, okay, you know, they're playing really quality teams. But at a certain level, you've got to beat those elite teams if you want to say you are an elite team. And Iowa wasn't doing that. Oregon came to play, shot lights out, 95 points, what, 55 points in the first half? Like, they just didn't let up. Iowa just couldn't stop them in the perimeter, but they haven't been able to stop anyone in the perimeter. Now they get a much tougher task with USC's defense. Yeah, I mean, USC just dominated Kansas, you know, pillar to post, just beat the hell out of them. I couldn't believe that. I kind of sided with Kansas on the money line, to be honest. It was kind of a line where I was kind of leaning either way. I didn't really trust Kansas, but I was like, Bill Self, good defense. USC's, you know, got some younger players. I was like, all right, let's go with Kansas. And from the opening minute, I was like, this was a wrong call. But USC, you know, great team. I think one of the problems I've had with USC is I backed them in a Pac-12 game near the end of the season against Colorado, and they just got lit up in the first half, and I kind of lost a little bit of faith in them there. But this is a team that just, they defend really well, especially inside. They're among the top schools in the country in blocked shots, opponent field goal percentage inside the arc of about 41.4%, best mark in the nation. Really hard to score inside because of those big guys. Of course, Evan Mobley's the big name there. This guy's going to be a top three pick in the NBA draft. His older brother, Isaiah. But then even if you look at their guards, they've got some big guards there. Drew Peterson's about 6'7", 6'8". I mean, these guys are huge. And you can really see that because teams have a really hard time scoring inside against them. You really saw that with Drake in the first round. The second half, Drake just couldn't put anything up. And I think that's going to be really tough for Oregon to deal with. One thing that, you know, like, you hate to put too much stock in a regular season games, but they played each other not that long ago, February 22nd, I believe it was. And in USC, to be fair, but USC ends up winning 72-58, absolutely stifle Oregon. And here's the thing, in that game, you see 58 points from Oregon, a team that likes to shoot the three ball. You think, all right, maybe their three pointers weren't dropping. Wrong. They actually hit their three pointers at a great rate. It was inside where they couldn't score. They were shooting 40% from inside the arc in that game. Just got muffed. And here's the thing. Like Mobley, Evan Mobley actually had an off game that day. He had maybe like 11 points, five rebounds, no blocks. So you go into USC, you get killed. Evan Mobley actually has an off day. You're hitting your threes. Isaiah Mobley was actually out with a calf injury. So now you're getting, you know, probably regular Evan Mobley. You're getting Isaiah Mobley back. And you know, you've got to try to do it again. And this game opened with just a 1-point spread. USC was just favored by 1 point. And I thought that was a bit crazy, to be honest. It's starting to move kind of more towards what I suspected it would be. I thought it would be -3 for USC. So we'll see. But I mean, right now, I'm definitely on the USC bandwagon. I think part of that reason has to be because consistency comes from shooting inside the arc. And, you know, you live by the three, you die by the three. If you get your three pointers rolling, you can hit them, you're going to win. But it also comes down to how you shoot inside. And Oregon's terrible at defending inside the arc. They allow an opponent field goal percentage of about 50% from inside the arc. That's about 90 points higher than USC. So I think when it comes down to shooting in close, getting those consistent baskets close to the bucket, I think you got to go with USC. And I jumped on that line at -1. I'd still be happy to take that -2.5. If we're looking at the game total, that opened at 139. That was a hard one for me to figure out. USC's just got such a great defense. I remember watching that game where they beat Oregon 72-58 and thinking, you know, these guys, like, they like to slow it down. Oregon's very efficient on offense. They don't actually play at a fast pace besides, you know, that Iowa game where they just lit it up with Iowa. But generally speaking, Oregon tends to play at a relatively slow pace going up against USC, tough defense. I would lean towards the under, except Oregon's just been an over machine. They've, I think, cashed overs in seven of their last games, maybe seven games in a row, something like that. But yeah, they've been an over machine lately, so it makes me a little bit leery about that. If we're talking totals, though, one total I really like is actually the first half team total for USC. They've scored 40 points in each of their last two games in the first half, so they're getting out to some huge first half starts. You look over at Oregon. Oregon actually hasn't been great at defending in the first half. They're ranking about 150th in the country, about the middle of the pack in terms of points allowed in that first half. USC, of course, they were getting shaky guard play and perimeter play at certain points of the year, but they've really come on in the tournament. Taj Eady's been playing really great at the point, had a 10 assist game in the first round. You look at the last round, they hit 11 three-pointers. So they're starting to get better perimeter play, better play out of their guards. And I think the first half team total is just set way too low for them on that game.
And one thing I'm noticing based on what you and Jason said is a lot of first half action. We've got three first half team totals and one first half spread with Gonzaga. Rohit, thank you very much. Going to be moving over to the South, bringing in Jared. And Jared, we've got a matchup in Baylor laying seven, taking on Villanova, one that many people didn't have either of these teams there. We heard a lot of Baylor is going to be the first one seed to lose. And a lot of people, myself included, had Winthrop beating Villanova. So to see Villanova winning another game right there, this is a unique spot now.
Yeah, exactly, Rob. I mean, I'll admit I was one of the people that also was fading Villanova every step of the way. And like Jason mentioned with UCLA, I got burned every time. I mean, but for a good reason. Like, Villanova stumbled down the stretch. I think they were 5-5 in their last 10, and they had lost their star point guard in Colin Gillespie. So they really just weren't looking like a team playing good basketball. But the way they got past Winthrop and the North Texas in the second round is they rained threes. They shot about 42% combined from beyond the arc in those two games. They shot 15-30 against North Texas to get to the Sweet 16. And they also combined that with good defense, in which they held both of those teams with 38% shooting from the field. The problem is Winthrop and North Texas were both outside the top 100 offensively, and now they're facing a Baylor team that is third in the nation. You know, people were sleeping on Baylor. You know, they also weren't looking like the dominant team they were earlier in the year. And like I said, they were kind of, people were thinking they were going to go out first. They look like the Baylor we remember now, though. You know, they move the ball well, they're shooting threes, they're quick, they're just attacking from every angle. And, you know, they really just kind of, they blitzed Hartford and they really put it to Wisconsin in the first half and just kind of cruised the rest of the way. But the thing that's really going to stand out in this game for me is Baylor's pressure defense. So, you know, led by Davion Mitchell, along with those other quick athletic guys they have in the backcourt, they really put pressure on the other team to take care of the ball and to not give up easy buckets. Against Wisconsin, which only had about average about 8.9 turnovers per game, they forced 9 turnovers in the first half alone. And I think this is the first time we're really going to see Villanova miss Colin Gillespie, because he was their primary point guard and their primary playmaker. So I'm expecting Baylor to really get out after them, really put pressure and take them out of any kind of offensive flow. Add in the fact that this is the best offensive team that Villanova will face yet. They're going to score a lot more. And I really think that 7 points is not enough for Baylor. I love them with that spread. So I'm going to take the Bears to keep rolling and kind of end Villanova's, you know, Cinderella as a 5 run.
All right, so let's keep this party moving. We've got Arkansas laying 11.5, taking on the Cinderella in Oral Roberts. And immediately on my mind is, why would you want to bet against Oral Roberts? Don't we love getting points and having the Cinderella story? Because I know on my end for Abilene Christian and Oral Roberts, while I didn't have action on either of those games, I did not want to bet against them for the spirit of the game of March Madness.
Yeah, well, I mean, how can you not love the fact that they're the second 15 to ever get to the Sweet 16? You know, you love them, and they knocked off, you know, two very popular teams, especially a very popular team to go all the way in Ohio State, and a Florida team that was kind of up and down, but had the ability to kind of hang with anyone. But Oral Roberts had some interesting splits. They're a very high scoring team. I think they're 10th in the nation in points coming into the tournament, but they went under against Ohio State in overtime, which is another high scoring team. And they went over in regulation against Florida that wasn't as good offensively, better defensively. The thing about Oral Roberts is that they didn't shoot very well in either game. They're outshot by both Ohio State and Florida, but they really won the turnover margin, and they still found ways to put together points and some big runs against two teams that were outside the top 40 defensively. And they're going to get a bit of a reality check here against Arkansas. The Razorbacks are 11th in the nation in defense. They can clamp down anyone, but they also have a lot of resilience. So the Razorbacks fell behind early against Colgate and Texas Tech, and they both came roaring back with big leads into halftime. You know, they got to the point where they held Texas Tech which is one of the better odds. I think they were 31st in the nation in offensive efficiency, held them to 4 field goals over a 15-minute span. And they held Colgate, which was second in the nation in scoring, into the mid-60s in points. So they can really kind of clamp down and go on big runs at any time. And then considering that they also have the offensive weapons, you know, with Justin Smith, with Moody, and all these other versatile guys, it really seems like they're just the most complete team that the Golden Eagles would have faced. And even though, you know, it's a double digit spread, even though you want to go with the magic of, you know, this 15 seed, you want to keep it going, I just think the Hogs are too good and are just going to, you're going to see a stretch where Oral Roberts doesn't score for a while, and that's going to be the difference. So I'm still going to take Arkansas with the points. In terms of the over-under, this started at 159, which is the highest total of any Sweet 16 matchup. And I, you know, you got these offensive teams, but I'm really concerned with the fact that for the Golden Eagles, Max Asemus and Kylo Banner had 75% of their points. So that, you know, all the offense came from two guys, and Eric Musselman's got a team with, you know, Jalen Williams and Devontae Davis and Jalen Tate. Like, they got a lot of long, athletic, versatile defenders, and they're just going to focus on those two guys. They're going to be able to clamp down, and they're going to be able to kind of limit it. The other thing with Arkansas is they turned Colgate and Texas Tech into one-dimensional teams. So they both shot about 46, 47% from three against Arkansas, but they're only 38% from the field overall. So it was really three or bust against the Hogs if you wanted to even score points. Now, Oral Roberts only shoots about 33% from deep, so I don't see how they're going to score enough points to get this total, you know, into the 150-160 range. You know, even if Arkansas puts up, you know, 85-90, I don't see the Eagles doing it. So I'm actually going to go under 159 there.
And we've certainly seen with higher seeded teams, the ones who are underdogs, that there's a greater variance of falling off a cliff because they've got to keep pace with a team like Arkansas. And even if they are a team that scores, if all of a sudden they go cold, it gets really cold. And this is where you can see it. It almost becomes binary of like a one or a zero. It's either on, or if it's off, beware, because there can be a gigantic cliff there. So, Jared, thank you very much. Moving on to the final region, we got the Midwest, bringing in Andrew. And, Andrew, we have a darling of a matchup, Loyola laying 6.5, taking on Oregon State. And, man, this Oregon State team is rolling. They are as hot as it gets in the nation. But right now, if you're going to look at heat index, I don't know if there's a team that the perception is hotter than this Loyola team, who just beat Illinois, destroyed everybody's brackets. And word is, this team is better than the Final Four team previously.
I'm sorry, Jared, right away. I'm going to bring up a pun that he just ripped me apart for in my write-up. If this is the matchup, are you a believer in Sister Jean and the Ramblers, or are you a Beaver in the Beavers? I see Lucky shaking his head. Anyways, it's a very intriguing matchup. The Beavers have won 5 straight games since the playoffs started, all outright as underdogs, all as about 5 points or more. And they've done it two ways. They've been unconscious from beyond the arc. They're shooting almost 45% from three in those games. They're defending the three-pointer, and they're only allowing opponents to shoot 38.6% from the field. And they're just playing as a team right now. They seem to really get up for each other. And it showed in both of their wins. Tennessee, I felt that matchup against Tennessee was kind of an easy one, because that was the opposite of what Oregon State is, a team that wasn't a team, had no chemistry at all. And it really bit them in the butt. But the Oklahoma State one, that was interesting. With Illinois losing earlier in the game, I was like, geez, Cade Cunningham and the Cowboys have a real chance to get to the Final Four now. And that was vanished some fast. They made the Cowboys take a lot of bad shots in that game. And it bit them in the butt. Loyola Chicago, on the other hand, yeah, just a super impressive performance against Illinois. Made Desunmu, they said they weren't going to let him beat them. They got the ball. He did his own part in that, in making some bad decisions in that game, but they were forcing the ball out of his hand. They were suffocating. It was baffling to watch to say, like, I was shocked the whole time. They didn't even make it close. Like, I think at one point they got it to within eight, and that was as close as Illinois got. But anytime they even got within eight, it was like, no, we're going back to about 12 or 13 now. And this Ramblers team, they pass the ball very well. They're not overly athletic, obviously. Cameron Krutwig is maybe the most intriguing best player in the tournament right now, but the guy moves with purpose. He has great court vision. Like I said, they pass the ball extremely well. I was a little bullish on them after the win against Georgia Tech, because Georgia Tech didn't have their best player and they didn't play overly well. So you come into this game against Illinois and you're like, oh, maybe they'll probably get ousted here, but no, they proved everybody wrong. And what I think is going to happen in this one, though, is getting those 7 points is really, really important. I think I'm going to side with the Beavers in that sense. They've only failed to cover the spread twice since January 10th. And that's stood out to me a lot. And while Loyola likes to play a slow pace, that is something that Oregon can deal with. They play at one of the slowest paces of the remaining teams in the tournament as well. And that's just fine with them. And while the Ramblers were able to take away Dosunmu, the Beavers are more of a, like, yes, they have Ethan Thomas and Gerard Lucas, but like they can spread it out to, there's not just one guy for them. So that'll be a problem. And while I think Krutwig will be a problem in this game, at least Oregon State has someone that they can body him with Roman Silva. So on top of that, Oregon State is an excellent free throw shooting team, but of course, so are the Ramblers. I think the Ramblers probably win this game, but 7 points is just too many. I think Oregon State is the side to bet there.
All right, last matchup. We've got Houston laying 6, taking on Syracuse, another darling. And we're not used to seeing Syracuse be a double-digit seed, but boy, if they looked impressive and rolling. And Houston is a team that many were skeptical about heading into the tournament in terms of, hey, can they come out of this bracket? And the opportunity for Houston to do so has never been better than it is right now. They're looking at a combination of Syracuse, Oregon State, and Loyola. So this is ripe for the pickings.
Yeah, but then they came out and they had a lot of trouble with Rutgers. This was a matchup that I expected them to steamroll through. Rutgers was not a great offensive team. They were solid on the defensive end, of course, but so is Houston, according to the advanced stats. And they were lucky to win that game. The Cougars were lucky to win that game. And we were a pretty strong make away from having the 10, 11, 12 seeds and 8 seeds. That those were the seeds we'd have in the Sweet 16 in the Midwest, which was just kind of crazy in itself. But as my boss here, Jason, says, that Syracuse defense makes people stupid. And that's been the case for Syracuse so far, both against I'm blanking right now, but who they played in the first round.
San Diego State.
I'm wearing a Leonard t-shirt and I forgot that. San Diego State was taking awful shots in that game, just didn't know what to do. The same thing happened with West Virginia. If it wasn't for McNeil hitting some shots late, that their numbers would have been much, much worse. And other than that, like, Buddy Boeheim has been excellent. This is just not the Syracuse team that looked like it finished 8th, I think, Jason, in the ACC this year. But yeah, so Buddy can go off at any time. He only had 3 points in the first half, then had 25 by the end of the game. He's going to be a tough matchup for anyone. It doesn't matter how good Houston's defense is. But now the Cougars also have to deal with the issue of the injury to, I'm blanking again. Dejon Giroux, he gutted out that performance. Hip pointers are really painful though. That'll be something where he doesn't practice too hard on all week and it'll feel fine. And then if he hits the deck at one point in this game, that thing will just it'll be super painful for him again. If they don't have him, or if they don't have him at 100%, this is going to be a tough matchup for them. I really didn't like what I saw in that performance against Rutgers. And I'll probably lay the points here again as well with Oregon. Houston is very strong on the offensive glass, and that will be an advantage in this game. The Syracuse defense is not as strong. That zone, while it is playing its best that it has been all season, that the one weakness is it gives offensive boards. The Cougars are one of the best offensive rebounding teams in the country. But the Cougars on top of that are just 1-4 ATS in the last five games when they're just 9.5-point favorites or less. So when they're double-digit faves, they do great. When they're less than double-digit faves, they have a little tougher time. And with the way the Orange are playing right now, I'm going with the Dogs again.
Yeah, and I'm going to be with you on that one. I'm looking to fade Houston. I think Syracuse is a great recipe for that. So what we're going to do now is we're going to bring everyone together on one screen and do a round table where we bounce around and jam about a few different things. And I want to start with lessons that we've learned from the first two rounds of the tournament, because I find it extremely valuable for future years as well as moving forward in this. And I'll actually get this party started in something that I learned in how to fade a team. And it actually came from how I actually won a bet. So one of my best bets was Oregon plus 300 to make the Sweet 16. And it was upon that realization that I wanted to fade West Virginia. I wanted to fade Kansas. And I was having a hard time figuring out what the best way to do it, because the brackets were filled with so many teams that I didn't trust. So when I looked at it from a bracket integrity, I was like, well, if I have West Virginia lose, I'm not really a fan of Houston. So how do I do this? And that's when the light bulb went off of fading a team to make the Sweet 16 and doing the opposite of what I did on the Oregon side. So instead of Oregon plus 300, hey, let me fade West Virginia's odds to the Sweet 16. Who wants to jump in with something that they have learned from their March Madness experience so far?
Well, I think one of the things you learn, not even from a number, is don't necessarily, you got to trust some of these really good coaches. You know, you're looking at some of these big seeds that have, you know, advanced, their higher seeds advanced. You have UCLA with Mick Cronin, who's a longtime great coach. Villanova, even though they're a five seed, they've been heavily doubted with Jay Wright, you know, rallied that squad, you know, to the best of their potential to get into the Sweet 16. Look at Syracuse with Jim Boeheim, you know, giving the secret sauce to the buddy and, you know, getting that 2-3 zone, that famous 2-3 zone back in the shape. So I think sometimes, especially when you're looking at some of these bigger name programs that are higher seeds or had like a down year, like you can't, sometimes you just can't question, you know, how good these coaches are and the impact that they will have on getting their teams ready to run in the tournament.
I think another thing specific to this year is because of COVID, there was no non-conference schedule for a lot of teams. You know, they were able to jam it in there here and there, but a lot of the small conference teams, especially some of these teams that have succeeded, didn't get to play a whole lot of games outside of their conference. And when they were playing games, they were playing the same team 3 and 4 times. So it's really tough to gauge. So I guess it's like, you know, you get to see the value of those non-conference games in November and December when it comes to measuring. So the next year's bracket or next year's first round bets, you know, put a little extra emphasis into those sort of things. You hate to go back that far in the schedule. But when you do have those small conference teams playing major, you know, Power Five conference opponents, you know, having a little bit of information there is also valuable, because we saw a lot of teams that we didn't have a whole lot of intel on against, you know, teams outside of their conference. And we've seen what's happened. We have this massive wave of upsets. What was there, 9 double-digit seeds in the round of 64 advanced? And we had another, what, 4 or 5 in the Sweet 16. So. Non-conference play worth its weight in gold when it comes to capping these round of 64 games.
Media perception is to add on to that. Media perception just seemed very wrong this year. Bill Walton was right, and we were all wrong. The Pac-12 was great. Big 12 is overrated. The Big 10 is overrated. And we live in a world where Bill Walton is the most correct of us all.
The Conference of Champions.
Well, you know, honestly, I think that's a big thing to do with it, is we put a little bit too much stock into these, you know, certain conferences being the, you know, the best conferences, the Big 10, the Big 12, that sort of thing. Because you look at these Big 12 teams that have, you know, that have, except for Oregon State, to be fair, but like you look at USC, you look at UCLA, I mean, they have really good overall records. So yeah, they were, you know, they were winning games in the regular season, but everyone was just saying, oh, they're just beating other Pac-12 teams. It means nothing. And it's like, well, hindsight, you look back at some of those games, like, man, those were some good games.
Those are some good teams.
Yeah.
So speaking of media narrative, one thing that has stood out to me is as we sit here in the Sweet 16, anybody who has Baylor winning it all in their bracket is sitting in a pristine position because everyone was really saying it's Gonzaga or Illinois, Baylor. They're not the same team post-COVID. Yet all of a sudden, here we are two rounds in, and it's like, wow, did this Baylor team go ahead and find what they had previously had right there? And I always like to be contrarian when I can in March Madness because rarely does the picking Gonzaga going to win because you have to do it so perfectly. But if you're able to select Baylor, and Baylor was so obvious from anyone who was following all year how good they were, but a lot of people, myself included, allowed the media narrative of this Baylor team's not good enough. They're not the same team. And I always remember back to late February when there was a bet on Gonzaga and Baylor minus 134 to win it all versus the field. And now we sit here and Baylor looks like they are the number two option to win it all.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, especially with Illinois going down on the other in the Midwest. They really kind of opened up if they can get to the Final Four. And in their own region, you know, with Ohio State and Purdue and some of those other, you know, what were the perceived real big threats to them. But the thing is, you know, to quote the famous Dennis Green quote, they are who they thought they were. We thought they thought we were. You know, like they are a veteran backcourt. They take care of the ball. And like when you watch their offense, it's just fun. They're 12th in the nation in assists, and they just, they move the ball around. They really take good shots. They're the best three-point shooting team in the country too. And so like the offense looks like it hasn't missed a beat. You know, they had that lull, but a lot of it was like COVID-related wonky schedules that kind of took them out of their rhythm and took them out of their flow. And, you know, now they're back to something that, you know, they can practice and they can kind of get back in the same routine. And they just look great. And they've also had that defense show up, where they're really like they're getting after you. And, you know, when it comes down to these, you know, key games at the end of the year, when you're getting these tight games, being able to pressure your other teams back or being able to take the other team out of what they want to do offensively and force, you know, easy points and transition and all that, they just look like a complete team that can match with anyone again. And yeah, I definitely think that they're anyone that took a chance on Baylor, you know, to run through and to go to the finals, got to be really smiling right now and liking their chances going forward.
I'm actually going to be a bit contrarian with this. I don't really put much stock in them blowing out Hartford. You know, that's great and all. Illinois looked awesome in the first round as well and then lost Loyola. And, I mean, you know, the win against Wisconsin, pretty good, but I watched a lot of Wisconsin games this year. Their offense is just brutal. They're great. I mean, I'm not completely sold on Baylor. They have a little bit of an easier trek through there now. I do think they beat Villanova, you know, especially with Gillespie out. I think they're going to have a tougher time against Arkansas. I think once they get into the Final Four, that's when they're really going to be tested. But no, I'm not really sold on this Baylor team. And if I was to kind of target one team that I would say that I kind of missed the boat on and that I faded them when I shouldn't have, it would actually be Michigan. Because, you know, I was a huge Michigan fan all year. They played great. Then they lost Livers. And I was like, he's huge on both sides of the floor. They don't have them in anymore. And Michigan really impressed me, especially in that LSU game. And Eli Brooks has just played amazing in increased minutes. So if I was to, you know, target one team that I think has impressed me, that I think I kind of overlooked coming into this tournament, it would actually be Michigan and not Baylor. Baylor really hasn't shown me anything that I'm that impressed with yet, to be perfectly honest.
I'll probably bet them to lose to Arkansas as well. I just love the way Arkansas plays, and that's a tough matchup for them.
It's when they'll really be tested, I think. I don't think Hartford certainly wasn't a test, and I don't think it was a test either.
No, I had Baylor dropping out to UNC, and I got seriously though. I think had UNC got through Wisconsin, they would have been a much tougher test for Baylor. I mean, just in size and the ability to get up and down the floor, they weren't holding on to the ball for, you know, 30 seconds and then working it around like that Wisconsin, you know, quicksand offense. So. Yeah, that was mine there. Michigan, I had LSU going past Michigan, and it was based mainly on that Livers injury too, because they had LSU was throwing a ton of depth at them, and that was going to be a big issue. But just they kind of stuck to their guns over that game and just kind of wore down LSU. I mean, they definitely have a tougher test in terms of Florida State, and I already spoke my mind on that. I think, I mean, if any team that I underestimated in my side of it, it would be UCLA. And we've seen teams like this come out of the first four, gain a little momentum, and then pick it up. I think every year, I don't have the stat at my fingertips here, but I'm pretty sure almost every year we see a first four team cracking the Sweet 16 and getting out of the first weekend.
They've won. They've made it to the first weekend, I think, 4 years since it started in 2011. And they've won at least one game every year, except for 2019 was the only year they haven't won at least one game.
Yeah.
The first,
I mean, there is something to say about momentum and maybe getting those tournament jitters out of your system before you get into the round of 64. Because how many good teams did we see come out a little flat in that round of 64, especially in the first 5 minutes of the game until they started, you know, banging bodies and picking up the pace again. Yeah. And then, I mean, I'm lucky. Most of my bracket has kind of gone according to plan. I mean,
you've had a pretty chalky bracket. What, three of the top four seeds are through?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. You've got two, four, then UCLA.
Yeah.
All right. One thing that we had talked about pre-brackets was live betting opportunities. And I think many of us, myself included, have been on the wrong side of this. Ohio State, Purdue, Illinois. It just so happens that it is three top four seeds, all from the Big Ten, who are down 9 points or more, where you're like, all right, cool. This is the opportunity for them to bounce back in. And it didn't exactly work out that way. So as we sit here at the Sweet 16, I'm curious if your guys' live betting strategy has changed at all, because I've always just been looking to get the favorite at plus money moving forward on the money line instead of getting the points. Have you guys changed at all your betting strategy, your outlook in terms of how you see live betting moving forward?
I would be having a great tournament right now if it wasn't for the Ohio State game and the Illinois game, because I went big repeated times on both teams on the live lines. To my mistake, you know, those are days in which the East region wasn't playing. So I was doing other things. I was kind of off and watching the game and doing other things at the same time. So I wasn't as tuned into the game as I should have been. And maybe that was my downfall, especially when it came to Illinois, just not being able to get anything going against Loyola Chicago. But I don't think it changes my strategy in terms of like seeing a favorite go down and then recognizing value, and not just doing it once, not just betting it once and saying, hey, I'm happy with this one bet, but also saying, you know what, if you're going to keep it here, I'm going to continue to hit it. And I think that's something that you can imply in live betting and also pregame betting as well too, is like, just because you already have a bet in doesn't mean you can't bet a better number if your opinion is still there. Now, of course, it went sideways on me and I ended up losing big on both of those Big Ten teams, but I don't think it really changes my strategy. All I would say is maybe pay a little closer attention to the games if you are live betting, and not, you know, don't build a deck box while the game is also on your phone at the same time.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, it's the same thing. I'm, you know, you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound, right? Like if you like your game, you like the game. And you still also have to look at, you know, how are these big seeds falling behind, you know, like, is it just a really hot streak? Like, I'll look at, you know, Arkansas against Colgate. Early on, Colgate was just raining threes and hitting anything and everything. And Arkansas was just taking some really weird, like, shot selection. Like, it didn't look like Arkansas, and Colgate was unconscious. And you knew it was going to change in the wheels. It was going to normalize at some point. And those are the games you really got to jump in on. I think at my best, I think I hit Arkansas three times on the live money line there, including once at plus 211. And within like 5 minutes, they had the lead again. And it all was restored and normal.
And I think that was like the first game of the tournament too, wasn't that? Like,
yeah,
it was.
Yeah. Everyone was like, live time.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the thing you have to look at is, you know, I'm not changing much, right? You know, again, if I see a big favorite falling behind early, and, you know, the way they fall behind is not like, it's not, you know, two styles that just aren't working. It's latest, you know, the favorite is playing weird or it's like some anomalous kind of thing, yeah, I'm definitely going to continue to hit it and, you know, hit it hard and capitalize the value opportunity.
I think for me, I think the best live betting option right now is still the totals. I think right away you can tell, especially with certain games when you've got a matchup with a fast-paced team against a slower-paced team, you can tell within the first few possessions whether the entire game is going to be faster-paced or slower-paced and which team is, you know, influencing the game with their tempo. And I think that's been one of the best live bets for me is nice and early. You can see which teams are getting going on offense, which teams are running the floor, and which teams are happy to set up in the half court. And I think that's been my biggest live betting moneymaker this tournament for sure, is just kind of zeroing in on that right away.
Yeah, I'll say second half totals have been a good one as well, yeah, too. Just see some of these, that Colorado and Florida State game the other night. I think there was a bunch of us watching that game and working at the same time. And I was like, I don't care what the over-under is for the second half, but I'm going to bet the over. Basically a countdown until like, okay, it's halftime, and then waiting for that line to come out and going. I think it came out, I think there was maybe like what, like 44 points combined or something at the half. And then the second half total came out 73, and you knew both teams were better offensively than what they had shown there. So I felt pretty confident. And I did, FSU did the line share of the scoring. I think they scored 45 or 47 points in that second half, and it went over. But again, it's one of those things where it's just kind of like, it doesn't add up, and where it is over a short period of time, then it's a chance to come back. But I love, especially with good coaches that make good adjustments too. And Leonard Hamilton is a fantastic basketball coach, and he was able to make adjustments in the second half that turn the game around. So those, you know, that could be something too, when you're looking at these totals, whether it is overs or unders, if a good defensive team has allowed a ton of points or vice versa, is, you know, see how the coach adjusts to those things, and knowing that there is a veteran coach that knows how to change a few things, tighten the screws where needed, and get the result that they want in that final 20 minutes.
All right. So as we wrap this up, what I want you guys to do is I'll go to each of you, let everybody know where they can connect with you. And then I would like you to share your best bets and your worst bet from the tournament so far, because it's something that anyone listening or watching right now, we want to hear your best bet and worst bet, because we are both smart and incredibly sometimes unfortunate in the bets that we are making. So Jason, I will start with you. Where can everybody connect with you? What was your best bet and your worst bet?
Yeah, you connect with me on Twitter at getting torched by the UCLA Bruins. at Covers JLo, and you can find all my good stuff on covers.com. My it's funny, my best and my worst bets of the tournament, both Abilene Christian. So I took them against Texas, and that looked great and felt really confident about that. And then my worst bet was Abilene Christian against UCLA. I knew very early into that game that Abilene Christian was going to struggle to score points unless they were creating turnovers. It was just one of those things where it's like, you know, 3 minutes into it, 4 minutes into it, 5 minutes into it, even though they came out kind of strong, I was like, this was dumb. This was the dumb idea. Why didn't I see that? It was a kind of a facepalm moment. So both Abilene Christian games were my best and worst.
Rohit, moving it over to you. Where can everybody connect with you? Best and worst bet of the tournament so far.
You can connect with me on Twitter at @covers_ro. So @covers_ro. And a couple of good bets. First round, one of my favorites, of course, is Oregon State. I was telling all the guys about that. As soon as that line came out, I was like, hammer that line. I sprinkled a little bit on the money line as well. Had absolutely no faith in Tennessee. And that kind of pulled through for me. Another one, of course, was Ohio. We talked about that last week. Virginia's just not a team that's been covering well or playing particularly well. Ohio's a dangerous squad. Kind of said that off the bat. Should have taken them on the money line, took them at ATS at least, and expected it to be a close one. And it certainly was, as they pulled out the win. Worst one for me, we already kind of touched on that. That was Kansas USC. I definitely put a little bit too much of an emphasis on experience and Bill Self being there before, and figured, you know what, Kansas is looking a little bit healthy. They have McCormick back. They've got Wilson. I was like, all right, Kansas, you know what, Kansas money line. This will be, if nothing else, this will be a close game. And then they just smoked. So yeah, that was my worst bet for sure.
Jared, moving over to you. Where can everybody connect with you? Best and worst bet.
You can find me on Twitter at JL Hawk. That's HOCH, not like the bird. best bets, probably any of the Arkansas live money lines I took against Colgate, especially getting in at plus 211, and against Texas Tech. I think I got them at like plus 155 at one point, and which they came back against both. As well, I had North Texas to cover against Purdue in the first round, so I like that. The worst bet in the non-Illinois live betting division would be actually against Abilene Christian when I doubled and tripled down against with the Texas Longhorns to win. And not only did they fail me, but they did so in a disgusting way of just turning the ball over 45,000 times. And then watching Abilene Christian against UCLA, I still don't know how Texas lost, and it haunts me at night.
Moving over, finally, to Andrew Kayla. Andrew, where can everybody connect with you? What was your best and worst bet of the tournament so far?
You can find me on Twitter at @covers_Kaylee and find all of our work at covers.com. We've got a great March Madness betting page, so everyone's stuff is all there. Check it out. My best bet was most of the first round. I hit almost 65% of my bets in the write-ups in the first round, and I was very confident, very happy with the way things went. That was despite a 8, 10, 12, all these lower seeds advancing. I was still doing well, very well on my spread bets and total bets overall. So I was very confident going to the second round. So my worst bet was every bet in the second round, where I think I hit 25% of my bets. I liked the way Illinois had played. I liked what West Virginia showed me and Oklahoma State. So I was very chalky in the second round and got absolutely murdered. So we'll just see what the Sweet 16 has in store.
And we want to hear from you. What is your best and worst bet so far of the tournament? What lessons have you learned? Has anything changed with your live betting strategy? You can hit me up on Twitter at Rob Cressy. My best bet was actually one specific game, Iowa, Oregon. I had the over. I had Oregon plus 300 to make the Sweet 16, plus two overs on player props. And that single-handedly got me up about 6 units. On the flip side, the worst bet, and I believe this is the worst bet of the entire tournament by anybody that I've seen, was I bet the over 15.5 total wins by the Big Ten. Woof, as I just watched. Yeah, crazy that I would choose the best conference. I had Ohio State in the Final Four, Illinois in the Final Four, Michigan in the Final Four. I was a 2 seed, Purdue's a 4 seed. Rutgers could have won 2 games. I'm sitting there, I'm like, how can the Big Ten not just crush this tournament? In literally two days in, I'm like, this is the worst bet that I have ever seen.
Regional bias.
Other than the fact that we watched some of those games and it's like, these teams are good, but apparently they were not, and it should have been to the Pac-12.
The Big Ten echo chamber. That's what that was.
Yeah, for real. So we want to hear from you. Hit us up. You can also hit up at Covers. Let us know how you're getting down. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The funkadelic devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rump. If you like the way the sound pumping in your back trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.